Good morning and welcome. I'm Renee Kemp, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. So whether you're an ultimate face painting, head-to-toe, sports gear-wearing football fanatic, or a bit more of a hater, either way, the Super Bowl is coming to town. Just a little history. Back in 1985, that was the last time that the Bay Area hosted the big game. Certainly a lot has changed since then. For one, that great new stadium in the South Bay. And secondly, it costs a lot more to host the big game. Another change, back in 1978, the stadiums were actually receiving a share of the profits from the game's ticket sales. But each year, as cities began to aggressively compete to host the Super Bowl, they've now upped the ante, and instead of waiving sales taxes on ticket sales, they now offer the stadiums free of charge. So by the year 2005, the NFL actually made free stadiums a requirement if you even wanted to bid to host the game. So another fact, there are studies that estimate the economic windfalls for the host areas at anywhere from $200 to $500 million. But there are other studies that show that the economic gains for the host cities are maybe only about 25% of that figure. So what can the Bay Area expect to gain from hosting the Super Bowl in 2016, and potentially at what cost? We've got three great guests to address all three parts of that question. Let's start with PJ Johnston. He's a spokesman for the Super Bowl 50 host committee, and he's been involved in the planning and the preparations ever since San Francisco first announced that it intended to bid for the golden anniversary game. And he joins me here in the studio. Hi, PJ.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And also Mark Purdy. He is in a rarefied position. He's a sports columnist at the San Jose Mercury News. He's been there since 1984, but he's covered 13 Olympic Games and, get this, more than 30 Super Bowls and 20 World Series. So certainly, Mark, you're in a great position to talk about what this looks like in other cities. So welcome to the show, Mark.
Thank you, and thank you for listing that instead of saying I'm just a really old guy who covers sports for a long time.
More of the same. But also want to talk about your blog, too, the world's smartest stupid sports blog. And you've been doing a countdown to the Super Bowl on your blog, yes?
Yes, I have. And I hope more of it's smart than stupid, but I'm trying to have fun with it, too.
Well, welcome. And we're also joined by Philip Porter. He's a professor of economics at the University of South Florida in Tampa, and he specializes in sports economics and the study of political institutions. And for sure, the Super Bowl is that rare combination of sports, politics, and economics. So Professor Porter joins me on the line from Tampa, Florida. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And, of course, we'd love to have you join us in this conversation. I have a hunch that there's a lot of pent-up demand for answers about the game, but because of the holidays, people aren't really focusing on it quite yet. But I have a hunch people have a lot of questions. Are you planning on attending the Super Bowl or any of the week-long activities? What do you think about the Super Bowl coming to town? Are you concerned about things like traffic or prostitution or price gouging? And do you have a business maybe that would stand to benefit from the Super Bowl? We hope you'll join us in the conversation. The number is 866-798-TALK. Again, the number is 866-798-8255. Or you can drop us an email, feedback@yourcallradio.org. And there's also the web opportunity at yourcallradio.org. So let's start with you, PJ. February 7th, 2016, official day, Levi Stadium, the place to be, but there's going to be a whole week of activities leading up to that. So what does it take to prepare for it, and what does it mean to be the host city for the game?
Well, it's a big deal to be the host city for the game, and actually in this case we're the host region. As you mentioned, the game's going to be played at Levi Stadium, which is in Santa Clara. The bulk of the activities will be taking place in San Francisco, including a big free public event at the foot of Market Street at Justin Herman Plaza, as well as the NFL Experience, which is sort of the NFL's theme park slash museum kind of thing that happens every year with the Super Bowl. That's going to be in Moscone Center, along with the media and a lot of other activities at Moscone Center. And for about 9 days, starting on January 30th, there's going to be a big focus on the entire Bay Area region. We're going to be in the limelight, in the world's eye. We think it's the best place in the world, and we want to show that off to the entire planet. The Super Bowl is the most watched sporting event, single-day sporting event in the world, and there is no better time to be in that limelight than the golden anniversary of this game that is seen all over the globe.
Philip Porter, you've studied the impact of economic impact of big sporting events. Is the Bay Area rare in that there are major cities that stand to benefit, not just the host city, but an entire region? Is the Bay Area rare in that way?
Well, we had a Super Bowl just a few years ago in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. It might be similar. You guys have a lot more dense population, but Miami's in the middle of Broward, Fort Lauderdale, Miami, that whole big region. So, no, I don't think that's unique.
So what do the benefits look like? Are we talking about businesses such as restaurants and hotels benefiting the most from this sort of thing, or are there other residual benefits?
Well, about the only real sector of the economy that benefits is the hotel industry, because they'll raise their prices substantially in light of the coming event. Large influx of people all at one time requires some adjustment on the part of the hotel industry. So they'll make a good deal of a good return on this, but there won't be that many more people in your community. The hotels won't be any more full or any less full for the month, and the restaurants will fare the same way.
Well, in this era of Airbnb, aren't there individual folks who are looking to rent their homes or part of their homes and standing to make some money too?
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't doubt that there'll be some. It won't be anything substantial.
Mark, you've covered 32 Super Bowls in your career. How have you seen the game evolve over that time?
Well, I've seen it evolve really, Renee, from just a game to a whole week-long hoo-ha or festival, or I don't know, or pop culture event. I mean, I think you can make a case. I know a lot. Most people have not been to a Super Bowl, but and it's when my first Super Bowl was Super Bowl 13 in Miami, actually. And it really was just one game, one day, and the media would show up maybe Tuesday and interview players and so forth. But there was not much in terms of big events taking place until the day of the game itself. There were some parties on, like, Friday and Saturday nights. Well, now it's evolved into, as PJ mentioned, kind of a nine-day mini World's Fair or whatever. I mean, I've made the case this – people will see – this may be the biggest pop culture kind of big event the Bay Area has seen since the 39 World's Fair, because it's the least zero-sum thing I cover. And as you mentioned, I cover the Olympics too. But every year, the NFL marketing department and also the sponsors that are connected to the game and people who are not even really officially tied to the game but do kind of guerrilla marketing stuff, they find ways to add on to it and take advantage of the attention that the game gets. Not just the number one sports event of the year, it's the number one TV show of the year. And so every year it seems like more and more events are added. This year, for example, for the first time, the NFL, every year there's a media day where it's kind of the kickoff to the week in terms of interviews. And usually it's been done on Tuesday morning, Tuesday afternoon. This year the NFL moved it back to Monday night and is going to put it on in primetime TV. I believe, certainly the NFL Network, and I believe CBS is either doing it, and PJ may know this more than I do. The NFL, CBS may be showing it live, and it's going to be at the SAP Arena in San Jose, downtown San Jose, where the Sharks play. And people can pay money to come in and watch. I mean, I joke, the NFL, anyone knows the newspaper industry is struggling. And so my joke is that my company can't figure out a way to make money out of what I do, but the NFL has figured out a way to make money out of what I do. And that's that they charge people to come in and watch me ask questions, along with people from all over the country and sock puppets from foreign TV stations. It's quite a spectacle. And so that's an example of a way that the event has expanded beyond just just a game.
Media Day, which is now this year for the first time going to be Media Night, is pretty amazing. I'm a former journalist myself, and the idea that people would pay money and come to watch journalists do their job is kind of amazing to me as well. But it's actually a lot of fun, and I'm told this sells out every year, and it's going to sell out well in advance of that January date. I think that, I would respectfully disagree that nobody but the hotels are going to benefit from this. First of all, it is the first week of February. It's traditionally one of the slower times in the tourism industry. San Francisco and the Bay Area rely heavily, in fact, tourism and the visitors and hospitality industry and our restaurants and our food culture and our music culture and our lifestyle is one of the driving forces of the Bay Area economy, and it's going to be celebrated by the million-plus people who come to the region and come through these various events, including the free public event in San Francisco, which will draw thousands of people. But it's also a chance for the best of the Bay Area to shine on that global stage. Our local cuisine, our restaurants, our bars, our local musicians. We're going to have a music stage in San Francisco. Local businesses, well beyond just hotels and restaurants, are going to participate and benefit. We've signed up 800 local businesses registered on our Business Connect program to get them involved. Now, many of them are going to get contracts. Many of them already have with both NFL and host committee sponsored events, but also private events as well. And those are caterers. Those are flower arrangers. Those are photographers. This is going to be a big deal for the entire region.
Well, Mark referred to it as the least zero-sum event ever. So it leads to the question that's probably on a lot of people's minds, just how much is it going to cost the San Francisco and Santa Clara areas to host the Super Bowl? What's the price tag?
Well, first of all, the San Francisco Bay Area Host Committee, Super Bowl Host Committee, has raised upwards of $50 million to host, organize, and put on many of these activities. The NFL handles the game itself at Levi's Stadium. From the outset, we were determined to make this the most philanthropic giving Super Bowl ever. And to that end, we've already given, just yesterday the day before yesterday, we announced we've already distributed more than $5 million to local charities, youth-serving charities in the Bay Area. That is before the game has even arrived. By the time, our goal is to surpass $10 million in charitable giving. That would make us the most giving Super Bowl ever. I think last year in Arizona, it was something like $2.5 million. We're raising money not only to organize these events, put on the free party in San Francisco, accommodate all these visitors coming to the area, deal with security issues and other transportation issues and things like that, but we're also taking that money raised privately to give back to the community in a way that will extend well beyond the game on February 7th.
So that was my question. It's all privately funded. Is that correct? There's no tax dollars being spent.
Well, it's all privately funded for the host committee that is organizing and putting on these events. Various communities have chosen to do certain things. Santa Clara is doing some events of its own. Mark might have a better insight to that than I. And their city council has, I think, raised money privately for that as well. There will be the usual kind of city services in San Francisco that are done for big conferences like Dream World, World Series parades, things like that. And so there will be some impact on local services in San Francisco. But San Francisco is a world-class city. We put on world-class events. We've hosted the All-Star Game in baseball. We've had three Giants World Series parades. We have these enormous conferences, Oracle World and Dream World. This is a great city, and this is what great cities do.
Professor Porter, let's talk again about dollars and cents. Being a host city can be a substantial line item. USA Today reports that the cost of being a host city grew from about $12 million in 2005 to about $50 million in 2014. So what are driving up those costs, and where's the money going?
Well, it's a great party, and the more elaborate the party becomes, the more it costs. But also just the security issues are becoming paramount, and that is very, very expensive to handle. And I think that's what's driving the cost up. But again, all the cities are responding with bigger parades and bigger parties and more events, and all of that's costly.
And do you
I wanted to mention just one thing. We were talking about, PJ was talking about how much business is going to be generated by this week, but this isn't business that's generated by the Super Bowl itself. It's just business that's generated by having a week-long bunch of parties. The people that are coming to the Super Bowl won't show up till the end of the week. So most of this stuff is just local, and we don't generate economic impact from local spending.
Well, I just disagree with that. I'm not an economist, so I'm not going to try and go back and forth with you on economics. However, but for the Super Bowl, we wouldn't have raised $10 million for charity. But for the Super Bowl, we wouldn't be having a free public event drawing tens of thousands of people to downtown San Francisco, where we will be featuring local musicians, local restaurants, local businesses that will be on display and selling their wares. So, you know, it doesn't just happen in a vacuum. It happens because we're planning this major event.
Well, I once again, I agree it's a great event and a great party, but when we go back and look after it's happened, we don't ever find any appreciable increase in local spending. All you're doing is stirring up people that would spend their money one other way and making them spend it this way, and the net result is no change in economic activity.
Well, yeah.
And that's happened.
Wait, can the dumb sports guy jump in here?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, please.
Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, I think I stop. You're both right. you know, I think in covering more than 30 of these things, I have come to realize everyone is a little bit different. And for example, when the Super Bowl was in Detroit, Super Bowl 40 was in Detroit. Detroit was happy with it just because Detroit has trouble getting people to come downtown for stuff. And so they staged a week-long festival, and I remember my colleagues at the Detroit Free Press did a really good story about, you know, some people, it was a winter carnival they staged downtown with a lot of the stuff, the same stuff will be happening and on the waterfront in San Francisco, same sort of thing. And people from the suburbs of Detroit that had not been downtown in years came down and spent money in downtown Detroit. So, yes, they probably would have spent that money in the suburbs, you know, if they hadn't done that. But it was good for downtown Detroit. Now, last year in Arizona, it was a little different because the game is in Glendale. It's a very much a parallel to here. And a lot of money was spent in Phoenix. But the people in Glendale and the people in Scottsdale received, you know, they staged their own stuff out there and brought money. Now, during the week, the professor's right. Most people that come to the game don't show up till Thursday or Friday. But Monday through Wednesday, a lot of the action is from local people. For example, the Monday night media night in San Jose, I would bet some people will show up there that have never been to downtown San Jose before.
Well, certainly, and if all goes well, we sort of have a track record in the cities of New Orleans and Miami. Between those two, they've hosted the Super Bowl 10 times over the past years. So what impact has it had on those cities who have done this again and again? What have we learned from that? Philip Porter, what do you think?
Well, once again, when we study sales activity, and we have very, very good data, and New Orleans is not so good, but Miami is exceptional, and Tampa is very good. The state collects data on how much economic activity occurs in every month. And so you can look from one time to one period to another and see that nothing extraordinary has happened in terms of sales, or even hotel occupancy, which is kind of an odd number. But there's a good reason for that. All of these things that are happening leading up to the Super Bowl, you mentioned the NFL experience and this the NFL charging to have people come in to see the interviews on Monday night. Those are local people spending money that's being exported from your community. The NFL is going to take that money away from San Francisco. And if it hadn't done that, that money would have been spent more locally, and the more local spending would have generated income for local people who would in turn spend that money again. So you're exporting. You've literally invited somebody into your backyard to sell you things and take your money away.
Well, I don't know how you guys spend your Monday nights in Florida, but here in the Bay Area, I think a lot of people tend to spend them at home. and doing homework with the kids or watching TV or whatever. I think this is an extraordinary opportunity in the first week of February that wouldn't otherwise happen. And there's just no getting around the fact that but for this event, we would not have been able to raise already $8.5 million for charity, and we're, as I said, our goal is to go past $10 million. That's money that's going to incredible local charities in enormous sums that wouldn't otherwise happen. And I just don't accept the premise.
You gave $500 million to the NFL and built them a stadium, and now you're talking about $10 million that comes back to your charities? That just seems like an upside-down equation.
This is the very discussion that folks have been having kind of on their own, too.
If I could say one more thing, you know, I think you, and I certainly respect the professor, you know, I've seen all kinds of economists say all kinds of things about the Super Bowl and the money, and I think most people agree the most of the figures that are quoted are inflated, but more, and on balance, a region makes more money. There's some money generated by having a Super Bowl in an area. And, you know, Professor mentioned the Airbnb not being much of an equation. I think here in Silicon Valley, it's going to be a big equation. I mean, I've done some reporting. There are people in the Santa Clara area within, you know, a mile or two of the stadium that are renting their houses out that weekend for $10,000, $20,000. So that's money that would not have – those people would not have realized if the game wasn't here. Now, I don't think you have the game for that people. I think you have the game for a lot of other reasons. But I think the net and the waitress who gets tipped – you're right, the NFL does take a lot of this money away. But the waitress who has a weekend who all of a sudden is getting tipped by the high rollers, you know, $300 for a meal instead of $30, which happens – you know, there are financial benefits. I don't know. We're really just arguing about too much. My inclination as a cynical reporter to say it's always less than what people want to say or some of the figures thrown around by Chamber of Commerce.
Well, right.
I think it's a net plus.
Whether it's the $200 million figure that is thrown around there, or whether it's the $500 million that's thrown around from a couple of years ago, the fact is every city that's ever hosted a Super Bowl has wanted to host another Super Bowl. It is definitely a net gain for the community and for the region in both real terms and in less tangible terms. This is a region from wine country down to Monterey that will be in the spotlight, that relies on people focusing on the Bay Area. We will have events and celebrations throughout that entire region. And again, for 9 days, there are going to be tens of thousands of people coming into downtown San Francisco who will not only be exposed to an incredible celebration here in the city, but we're going to be steering them toward our local merchant districts, Chinatown, North Beach, the Mission, West Portal, the Castro. These are places that are going to also see the benefit of all these people streaming into San Francisco on a week of February where they wouldn't otherwise be doing that.
Well, the big question is, on a lot of people's minds, what role does the community have in this whole process? What say-so do people have about this event coming to their town? We're going to tackle that question when we come back. Stay with us.
You're listening to Your Call on Local Public Radio, KALW, San Francisco. If you would like to join in today's conversation, the toll-free call-in number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-TALK. If you would prefer to write your question or comment, the email address, feedback@yourcallradio.org, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11 o'clock, the BBC's World Have Your Say. And then at noon today from the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco, it's Bina.
Welcome back to Your Call. I'm Renee Kemp, sitting in for Rose Aguilar today. What happens when your city becomes the host city for the Super Bowl, and what role does the community have in the decisions that are made? You might remember the controversy that erupted when the Super Bowl 50 committee wanted to take down Muni wires. The community wasn't very happy about that. There was a big backlash about that. And Harry from San Francisco is on the line, and he wants to know if there's actually a democratic process for these decisions. Hi, Harry.
Hi, it appears like the first thing we heard about this is when it was announced. And just like other things like outside lands that really don't belong here, it's been forced on us. And also the statements about removing the homeless bring absolute shame on us. I don't believe the city's going to get off without tens of millions of dollars in security and other fees that these people are not going to be paying. I don't understand why the stadium that's so far away shouldn't be having the celebration there, and why, you know, this corporate shill, the mayor, didn't initiate any sort of public discussion before agreeing to have this here.
How much public buy-in did you get?
Well, we have enormous public buy-in. As a matter of fact, we've got more than 5,000 volunteers signed up to help us welcome people to San Francisco and to the greater Bay Area. They're going to be out and about at airports in downtown San Francisco and Santa Clara and other places, helping people enjoy the Bay Area region and helping them move around and get around and really showing off this place. I just respectfully disagree. I think great cities do great events like you mentioned outside land. I live a few blocks away from Golden Gate Park. There are tens of thousands of people that stream in for that weekend, and I think it's a great thing. I know not everybody feels the same way, but, you know, we live in an urban environment, one of the great cities of the world, and we do great things.
P.J. Johnston, you're our spokesperson for the Super Bowl 50 host committee. We're also joined by Mark Purdy, a sports columnist who's covered more than 30 Super Bowls, and Philip Porter, a professor of economics at the University of South Florida, and you specialize in sports economics. Of course, there is a lot of question, PJ, about just how much control the committee has over any of the decisions that are being made around the event. So do you simply have to comply with the NFL or the host committee's demands once you agree to become the host city?
I'm not sure what the question is. I can tell you that the cities and the local jurisdictions still run the cities and have the final say over what happens in any given municipality. And that's true in Santa Clara, and that's true in San Francisco. You kind of, frankly, had the story about the Muni overhead wires wrong. The fact is that the host committee was in discussions with the San Francisco Municipal Transit Agency for many months about how best to accommodate the free public event down at the foot of Market Street and on Justin Herman Plaza and have the least impact on the trains and buses that go through that area. And we were in discussion about whether or not, for safety reasons, we needed to take down wires to accommodate some of the events that were going on. And after working with them over the last, you know, couple of months, we determined that we should move around some of the event activities so that we wouldn't have to take those wires down.
Was there public input in that process?
Sure. People made their feelings known about it. But the fact is, it was never a done deal. It was never planned. It was a discussion with the appropriate agency about whether it made sense to do it. And in the end, it didn't make sense to do it.
Well, certainly, Mark, in your blog, you've been weighing in on these issues over the past weeks. What have you been getting in the way of feedback to your blog about these questions?
Well, there's an intense amount of interest. I work down here in the South Bay, and as PJ knows, San Jose is the largest city in the Bay Area. But we tolerate our smaller neighbor to the north and hope things go well for them up there. in answer to your question about how cities relate to this, this is an example. And it's interesting to me how this Super Bowl is going to mirror kind of the Bay Area dynamic in general. San Francisco does a great job putting on conventions, having parties, taking pictures, postcards, looking at each other in the mirror. And the real business gets done in Silicon Valley. And that's kind of the way the Super Bowl is going to work. When the committee, the Super Bowl 50 host committee, and the NFL were examining the whole procedure or how the whole week's going to work, they quickly determined that, you know, the teams, the best practice areas were down here in the South Bay at Stanford University and San Jose State University. Therefore, they wanted to make sure that happened, and the teams, the NFL, didn't want the teams to stay too far away from the practice facilities. So the teams they were looking for places for the teams to stay near the practice facilities. The San Jose State facility needed some money to upgrade some things. So the city of San Jose, and in conjunction with the host committee, helped raise some money from private sources so that San Jose State got another, there's another benefit of this. San Jose State's football facilities got an upgrade raised by private money out of this. And then as a result of all this, one of the participating teams is going to stay in downtown San Jose at the San Jose Marriott, and the other one is staying in Santa Clara at the Santa Clara Marriott. The city's worked with the NFL and the host committee on this, and as a result, there's going to be some outreach to fans of those two teams to have a lot of them stay in San Jose and in Santa Clara, where, as the professor mentioned, maybe those rooms would have been occupied, maybe they wouldn't have been, but in my reporting, I read the cheapest hotel room now you can get that weekend here that I can find is $500 a night at a little, you know, Motel 6 type place in Santa Clara.
$500 for a Motel 6. That's kind of on the dark side of the economy thing, right?
The week after that, the room is $120.
Yeah.
So the answer is the city's work with the league and the host committee to get this done. And, people have been very interested in my blog. And it's fascinating. People are looking at this almost as a spectator event, how the whole thing comes together. I've received a lot of interest about stuff that, you know, I don't think my next-door neighbor, for example, would care too much about hotel rates in Santa Clara County. But she's very interested in this.
I would just add one thing to what Mark said, and that is there's actually another benefit that is maybe less obvious, and that is that traditionally the cities in the Bay Area have had sort of a rivalry or a little bit of a standoff relationship with each other. And over the course of planning for this the last couple of years, the cities of San Jose, Santa Clara, San Francisco, Oakland, and others have really worked closely to pull this event off. It's actually been a great cooperative effort throughout the region. And yes, one of the reasons why the teams are having the practices at those two stadiums is because it was an intended goal to spread the wealth, so to speak, and have events in San Jose, in Santa Clara, in San Mateo County, in the East Bay, in San Francisco. The reason San Francisco is the host city is frankly because it has the thousands of hotel rooms that are required for hosting a Super Bowl. But this is truly a regional effort, and I think the mayors of all those cities and the communities from Monterey to Sonoma and Napa counties will tell you this has been great for the region, and it's going to be better when the game actually arrives.
And what you're here playing out now is exactly the dialogue that has been happening ever since 2 years ago when this issue first came up around the Bay Area. What are the pros and what are the cons to having the big game come to town? For those of you just joining us, I'm Renee Kemp sitting in for Rose Aguilar. This is Your Call, and we're podcasting our show. You can find more information on yourcallradio.org, and you can also listen to past shows there. Briefly, let me just throw this in. Tomorrow, we're going to be discussing coverage of the Paris Climate Summit. The 2015 Paris Climate Conference, also known as COP21, kicked off on Monday, and you're going to hear the results of at least 2 weeks where the world is focusing on what's happening on our planet. And Monday, we continue climate change coverage with a week-long series. We'll kick off a week discussing sea level rise right here in the Bay Area. Even if the Paris summit leads to a breakthrough, are rising sea levels going to make us vulnerable right here in the Bay Area? How do we prepare? And by all means, we invite your story ideas as well. Drop us a line at feedback@yourcallradio.org or give us a call, 866-798-8255. Today, we are talking football, specifically Super Bowl 50. And if you'd like to join us, 866-798-8255 is the number. And we have Larry on the phone. Larry, do you plan to attend the game? How do you think it might impact you? Hi, David. David from San Francisco. Let's go to you first.
This is a great show. My question, Renee, is for PJ. I know he's not an economist, and he's been a spokesperson for Gavin Newsom when he was a mayor and as a lieutenant governor. But he's not an economist. But, you know, $10 million seems like it, and I'm not a hater, but $10 million seems like a drop in the bucket when you talk about football quarterback salary of $100 million, and you've got, you know, 32 teams, and they're not paying for the stadium and the benefits of the transportation. I think the people that are going to be able to afford to go to the games are going to be the ones that are be happy. The people that have to put up with people on transportation that are crammed on already transportation maxed out systems are going to have problems. It was a week before just now that Muni was addressed. And so, yeah, maybe years of planning, but it's gotten down to the last 10 weeks of the game before all is done. So, PJ, increase the amount in the charity. That's a drop in the bucket. It's crazy.
PJ?
Well, here's what I would say is that
ticket prices alone for the Monday night press conference, how much is that going to generate?
So
I know you're not an economist, but you do seem to have some figures.
Thanks,
well,
David.
What I wanted to say is that I work for the Super Bowl 50 host committee. The Super Bowl 50 host committee is actually a group of local people here in San Francisco, in Santa Clara, in San Jose, and throughout the region, whose goal is to organize and accommodate and plan for hosting this event. We're not the NFL. Now, in terms of the charitable contribution, from the outset, our chairperson, Daniel Lurie, who some of your listeners may know, he runs an organization called Tipping Point, which is a foundation that serves primarily underserved and poor communities in San Francisco. It's one of the great charitable organizations in the Bay Area. Daniel said from the start, if we're going to do this, if we're going to bid for this game, we're going to do it in a San Francisco way, in a Bay Area way. We're going to show off the whole region, and we're going to make it the most charitable Super Bowl ever. And to that effect, he set out a mandate that 25% of every dollar raised by the host committee would go to nonprofit, high-performing charities in the Bay Area so that there would be a lasting legacy. The NFL requires every host committee each year to donate at least $1 million to charity, and then the NFL matches that $1 million.
I think the caller was saying that amounts to a drop in the bucket.
Well, that may be his perspective, but what I'm saying is we locally have raised $10 million, we've already spent $5 million, we've raised $8.5 million, and our goal is to surpass $10 million. That's more than any Super Bowl in the past. And someone can feel however they feel about the game of football or the NFL, but that we are the locals who are raising money for our community to have a legacy well beyond the game, and it's more than any other community has done in the past with any other Super Bowl.
Philip, what are your thoughts on that in terms of the economy? And I also want to ask you about the so-called dark economy, the things that come under the radar, whether it's prostitution or price gouging. Talk, if you will, about the $10 million that PJ says comes to Bay Area charities, how that compares with other cities and other Super Bowls past, and the so-called dark economy. Philip?
Well, I haven't paid attention to the charitable. That hasn't been part of my research, so I really can't speak to the idea of how much they raise and what that means. But I'm sort of in agreement with the call-in that, you know, you're giving the NFL so much money just to host the event or to have the team in your community to turn around and talk about this as a great way to raise charity. You could have not built that stadium and given 500 or million or a billion dollars to charity. The thing that really I want to speak about is that we're not comparing apples and apples when we talk about the economic impact of the event. The money that's being spent by the local communities is after-tax money, and the thing that they're talking about as economic impact is before-tax money. And since your tax rate is, what, 7%, 8% in San Francisco on sales, you're only going to get the magnitude of the difference is 15 to 20 to 1. So you're going to have to bring in $100 million just to have $5 million to spend on this event. And the event's going to cost your community $50 million or more. So
it's not going to cost your community $50 million or more. I don't know where you get that. The host committee
just say that you raised $50 million for this?
Right, from the Googles, from the...
from the community, right? So
from the business community that sees this as a great opportunity for the Bay Area region and who also bought into the notion that they want to give at least a quarter of every dollar to charity. It wouldn't happen but for this game. And so it is not $50 million exiting our community. These are the corporate partners in the Bay Area, Silicon Valley, San Francisco, and elsewhere who, frankly, believe that it's good for the community to do this, and that's why they've stepped up to the plate and given their money.
All right. The dollars and cents always seem to be the place where people get stuck in terms of whether this is a good thing or a bad thing for their area.
Well, I personally think, you know, everybody's kind of right here. I mean, $10 million can be perceived as a drop in the bucket compared to a lot of the NFL money being thrown around. At the same time, as PJ points out, it's also more than any other region has raised as part of the Super Bowl. A colleague of mine and writes for the Phoenix newspaper, Dan Bickley, has used the phrase, he says that Super Bowl is like America's campfire. People like to gather around it and stare at it, and people are drawn to it. What's really happening is, because of that, you know, people are going to come there and spend money. That's just the way. We can argue about why that dynamic happens. The question is, what do you do with that money? And so if some money's going to charity, that's great. But yeah, most of the money, but some money's going to go to local people, the workers who get the bigger tips and the people renting their houses, and a lot of money's going to go to the NFL. The money's going to be spent somewhere. And so, you know, I guess my attitude is, you know, if some of the money can become, you know, spent here in good ways, that's good. And yeah, the NFL is going to take its cut. And that's American business, and the professor Porter can, you know, cite his figures, and he's right, and I think BJ's probably right.
But so, I think if we're shifting money from Google and Hewlett Packard and other corporate entities who have a lot of logs in the fire, and spending it on high-performing charities in the Bay Area, I don't know where people see $10 million as a drop in the bucket.
It would be nice if those companies had another reason to do that, but this gives them a good reason to do that. I mean, it's just the way the dynamic works, you know.
There's a charity called First Place for Youth, which is a nationally recognized model for helping foster kids. They received $250,000 grant from this host committee in the last few months. That's an enormous shot in the arm for an organization like that. I think we're being a little blasé about the fact that these high-performing charities need money. We've created a mechanism for them to receive pretty substantial investments, and it doesn't happen without some catalyst. And in this case, the catalyst is the Super Bowl.
Let's talk to someone who's interested in the impact that it will have on his life, a local, because that's the real discussion, right? The benefit versus the impact on the local community. So let's talk to a caller who says that he's going to stay home and try to stay out of the way. Thanks for calling. Hi, Larry. Can you hear me? Is it? Okay, go ahead. MoMA?
Yeah, BoMA. This is BoMA, yeah.
Sure, go ahead.
So the guy who's in charge of host committee is talking about generating income for the local economy. But all the artists who have been selling down here at the Justin Hellman Plaza through the San Francisco Arts Commission will not be able to work that whole week. And on top of that, what's painful about it is they pay taxes to the state like everybody else. So how does he justify closing down people's businesses? How are you helping the local economy if the locals who work here cannot work at the Justin Hellman Plaza that week?
So actually, as it relates to the street artists, we're working with the San Francisco Arts Commission to figure out how best to accommodate the street artist program. As listeners may know, there are officially sanctioned street artist booths on public spaces around San Francisco, and some of them are at Justin Herman Plaza, others are in Fisherman's Wharf, others are elsewhere, and they typically, first of all, they're public spaces, and so throughout various times during the year when there are events in public spaces, they can be impacted. This actually is going to end up being a good thing for the street artists citywide because, first of all, February, the first week of February is typically one of the slowest parts of the year for street artists. I know this because I used to be on the Arts Commission. And all of a sudden, you're going to have tens of thousands of people coming into San Francisco and experiencing the unique, vibrant, interesting culture of San Francisco, of which the street artists are a huge, integral part of it. We think that through accommodating some spaces as part of Super Bowl City and just the influx of people to all of downtown San Francisco and really throughout all of San Francisco, street artists are going to do well.
Okay, PJ, let's go to one last call from San Francisco. Bilal from San Francisco. Go ahead.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good, thank you.
Yes, I wasn't listening, and I just got a note to call in to Judy. I guess the issue is the mayor and his sweeping of homeless people for the Super Bowl.
Your question is about the Justin Herman Plaza area, people being removed for the Super Bowl festivities from Justin Herman specifically?
I'm actually calling in. I was given a note at mm-hmm. the office that said to call into this number, and mm-hmm. its subject was the mayor's sweeping homeless people out of San Francisco due to the Super Bowl.
Okay, PJ?
Well, I don't know if I can speak for the mayor, but I think that you may have read in the Chronicle today the mayor and members of the Board of Supervisors just made an announcement about some pretty significant improvements to the response to homeless people in San Francisco. I think the critical issue is this. Homelessness is an important issue 365 days a year, not just during the 9 days of the Super Bowl. I think the mayor said that he worries that it is unsafe and inappropriate for people to be living on the streets. That's why his focus has been to move people into safe, stable shelter and eventually into sustained housing. I think that's the mayor's goal, and I think that's his goal 365 days a year, not just during the 9 days of the Super Bowl.
Okay. Well, I think we have time for one last call. If you have a question, by all means, give us a call. But I think we can maybe break a little news, too. Mark Purdy, you have the inside track on who the act might be for the halftime show. You're going to break the news here?
Well, as we all know, there's no more important piece of news in on the globe than who's going to appear at the halftime show. Well, I have a good source. This is outside the NFL machinery. It's more in the show business machinery that says tonight, this is traditionally what happens. The NFL announces that Thursday night or right around Thanksgiving, like the week after Thanksgiving, and so it'll be announced tonight on the NFL game. And my information from my pretty reliable, very reliable source, I think, is that Bruno Mars will be kind of the centerpiece of the show. But it's the 50th Super Bowl, so it's going to be a big hoo-ha with lots of different performers. An NFL executive told me a couple months ago that the 50th show, they want to honor the past, the present, the future. So maybe we'll have a 10-year-old kid rapper out there too. I don't know. But Bruno Mars is going to be the centerpiece. This has long been rumored. I think some magazines reported a couple months ago that he was being asked to curate it. And Adam Levine of Maroon 5 is under contract to the NFL that weekend. They're not sure what part he's going to play, maybe a pregame show or something else. But and there'll be other big performers as part of it, but Bruno Mars will be the centerpiece. That's my information, and if I'm wrong, you can call me back next week, and callers can yell at me.
Now, see, my guess was that because it was the 50th that they would go old school and go with, you know, sort of an older act, but Bruno Mars works too.
The NFL executive I talked to a couple months ago kind of implied that, so maybe you'll see, like, performers from the past, I don't know, like Diana Ross or some of the other big names they've had in the past. Paul McCartney may show up and just, it's only 15 minutes long, so I don't know how many people they can cram in there. But I think, yeah, you'll see some sort of generation-spanning thing from, you know, 1967 to when the first Super Bowl was till now. And I know that the professor is very excited about this news.
And I'm wondering, too, you're thinking that Eddie DeBartolo might get the Hall of Fame nod, too.
Yeah, well, that's the other part of the Super Bowl. It does become kind of a business convention, both for the NFL owners and the media. And one thing that happens that weekend is that the Pro Football Fame electors, which is a group of my media colleagues, sits down and decides who's going to be in the Hall of Fame class that will be inducted next August in Canton, Ohio, where the Pro Football Hall of Fame is. Eddie DeBartolo, the former owner of the 49ers, is on the list, and I believe, in speaking to my colleagues that I know are involved, and I believe he probably will be voted in, and that will be announced the day before the Super Bowl game, at a function that night. So
it'll be good if it's the Bay Area. Yeah. A Bay Area
and
favorite.
Also,
yeah.
And for Raiders fans, Ken Stabler will probably be voted in that day, too. So that'll be fun.
Well, you heard it here first. Let's get final thoughts from you. Let's go with you, Mark, since you're already there with us. We've got about a minute for you to just give me your final thoughts on what this will mean for the Bay Area for the Super Bowl to come to town.
My thoughts?
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you. As I mentioned, I think this will be the biggest pop culture, big event hoo-ha since the 1939 World's Fair. I think people that have never experienced the Super Bowl will get to see a lot of cool stuff. I know there are a lot of people that poo-poo and say this is wasn't helping thing. I think a big region, a big Bay Area region, there's room for a lot of stuff to happen here.
Okay, Philip Porter, let's go to Philip while we've got about a minute left. Philip Porter, your thoughts on the Bay Area?
I agree with Mark. It's going to be one heck of a big party, and what a great thing it'll be. But if there's any noticeable economic impact associated with this Super Bowl, it'll be the very first time that it's ever happened.
PJ, that means you get the final thought.
Yeah, I just don't agree with that, but I think like every other city that's ever hosted a Super Bowl, the Bay Area will want this back again, and I hope one of the reasons for that is we're going to have the best, most San Francisco Bay Area-focused Super Bowl of all time.
All right. Thank you. We've been speaking today about Super Bowl 50. Mark Purdy, sports columnist for the Merck, Super Bowl 50 host committee spokesperson PJ Johnston, and professor of economics Philip Porter. Thank you all for joining us. Thanks for your emails and phone calls. I'm Renee Kemp, sitting in for Rose Aguilar today. This is Your Call. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll discuss coverage of the Paris UN Climate Conference. The two-week-long global summit has brought together more than 40,000 delegates, diplomats, activists, and journalists in Paris for negotiations over the future of our planet. How is the historic summit affecting the quality of climate change coverage? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with Mark Herzegard and you.
Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Laura Flynn produces the show. Malihe Razazan is senior producer. Matt Martin is executive producer. And Rosalie Atkinson is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music is performed and composed by Live Human. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.